Session number 20966, Reel 1.
Janosz Kapuscher, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Újpest, which was a suburb of Budapest. It's a garden suburb. Now it is part of Greater Budapest.
Which year was this?
1929.
Did both your mother and father come from Újpest?
No. My father came from Heves, which is a northeastern county of Hungary. And my mother comes from Rákospalota, which is just another suburb, just one step further out of Budapest.
Can you tell me something about your family background, what your father did for a living, and so on?
My father trained and qualified as a textile engineer, and he went to the war in 1914 from a position in the textile industry, and he became a much decorated war hero in the 1914-18 war. He lost, he was injured several times, but the last one was he lost the use of one arm, and he became involved afterwards in the rehabilitation of war veterans and war widows and war orphans in Hungary, and established mainly two industries in Hungary. One was making so-called Hungarian Persian carpets, where mainly war widows and war orphans were collected in little workshops, and they were making these carpets in the original Indian, Persian, Turkish way. And I even myself sat in front of looms and made knots in carpets. I was about 6 or 7 at the time. And the other industry was a security firm. They were watching property, and they were taking care of cars and bicycles and motorbikes and football matches and larger other sporting events. And in these establishments, only war veterans and war widows were employed. And my father was very proud of his war exploits, and wore these medals with pride, and he, because of his exploits and because of his handicap war injury, we became sort of exempt from Jewish laws to start with, which came in 1938, the first such laws in Hungary. And perhaps I shall talk about that later when we come to that time. My father's parents in Heves, which was the county town of the county of Heves, my father's father was a cobbler, and my mother came from a family. My grandfather was a collector of sugar beet in the country for the state, really. And later on, he opened a greengrocer shop in Rákospalota. And my grandparents, as far as I can remember, were in this shop, in this corner shop, in the little suburb. My mother schooling ended with so-called economics secondary school, and she was a clerk in an accounting firm until her marriage. My parents married in 1919.
Were there brothers and sisters in your family?
I had one brother who was born in 1920, and he was born premature and always slightly precarious health-wise. But he was a brilliant mathematician, and he became an engineer, an electrical engineer. He graduated in 1942 from the university in Budapest, Technical University. But then, perhaps I should talk about him for a little while. He was 9 years older than myself, so the distance was quite significant. And unfortunately, we never really got on with one another. He was also a musician, an amateur musician, played the violin very poorly, very painfully for me, because he was more most of the time out of tune. But I have learned the love of music from him, really. He, as I said, graduated in 1942. He worked for 2 years as an engineer in a mechanical. They were making nuts and bolts and various metal parts for the engineering industry. But in 1943, end of 1943, he was called up to serve in the forced labor camp of the Hungarian army, like most and many other Jewish young men. They served as handymen, trench diggers, laborers, really, road builders. They were not issued any weapons because they were not trustworthy as far as the Hungarian army was concerned. They haven't even been issued any clothing or shoes. They had to use their own clothes and their own shoes. And he was taken to the Eastern Front, southern Poland, or the southern Ukraine, and all we know, we have never he perished in the war sometime in 1944, early 1944, and we think he perished around the town of, as it was then named, I don't know what is the present name of the town, Stanislaw. We have never been informed officially of his death. We had very scanty information from some of the soldiers who were not even colleagues in the forced labor battalion, but in the Hungarian army, to whom they were attached. And we were suspicious of the news at the time, and that is really the best we know about his probable death at the time, which was early 1944.
And he was your only brother or sister?
Yes, there were only the two of us.
Did you have a religious upbringing?
I never knew my father's parents, but I knew very well my mother's parents. And they were members of a mildly Orthodox community in Rákospalota. And in the great festivals, during the great festivals, we spent the days in my grandparents' house, and we went to the synagogue in Rákospalota, which was an Orthodox, not a very strict Orthodox, but nevertheless an Orthodox community and a synagogue. Otherwise, in Újpest, which had a population of 80,000 at the time, there were 20,000 Jews in the town, and there was a large, what was called there a neolog community, which is equivalent, I think, to the Reform synagogue here. So they were observant, but very loosely observing. My mother had a kosher household until 1941, when it was forbidden for kosher meat to be prepared in Hungary by Jewish laws. I am not absolutely certain of the date. I was very young at the time. And from 1941 onwards, our household was not kosher anymore, and we ate pork, and we still do. And after we remained somewhat observant, but not very strict. We did travel on the tram on Saturdays, and we handled money on Saturdays, but we went to the service nevertheless. I think mainly for the sake of being with the community rather than for religious reasons. Nevertheless, I know what should be done on various festivals, but we are no longer observant these days. After the war, my mother continued with the normal household. We never returned to kosher, even though the possibility was there around 47-48. It became again possible, but we never returned to kosher household. Now, we continued to belong to the community, which numbered 2,000 after the war. So from 20,000, it dropped to 2,000. 18,000 more or less perished in the concentration camps. My grandmother, maternal grandmother, died in 1942 of natural causes, but my grandfather, I think he was 74 in 1944, was deported with one of my aunts, and they never returned. I lost a cousin, and I lost a first cousin, and I lost three aunts and two uncles in the Holocaust, and of course my brother during the war.
Can you remember what life was like for families like yours in Újpest pre-war?
Yes. Life was until about 38-39, I would say normal. We went to school, we studied, we had music lessons. My parents had a social life. I watched my mother playing bridge perhaps twice a month, and that's how I learned to play bridge, by just watching her. We went not very often to concerts, to the cinema, even to theater. Not very regularly, not very often, but certainly once a month, concert or theater. Cinema perhaps twice a month. And we had many friends. There was no shortage of food or clothing or anything else. We lived in a house which was built by my father, according to my father's plans, in 1927, in the suburb, on a corner plot in a fairly large garden. As far as I can remember back, we have always had dogs in the house, partly, well, mainly for security reasons. Next, we lived on a corner at the junction of two roads, and on the opposite corner there was a pub. Now, in Hungary, the pubs were a no-go area almost anywhere, unlike in Britain, where it is a social place, a social club, more or less. In Hungary, pubs were violent places, rough places, and often our fences were broken down by drunks leaving the pub at closing time. And dogs were a deterrent against such people. We always had pulleys, which are the old Hungarian sheepdog, very shaggy dogs, highly intelligent. And I remember with fondness of our dogs, especially one. Her name was Filko, F-I-L-K-O. That's the Hungarian spelling. I was always allowed to sort of select the puppies, either for keeping them on to keep continuity, or to whom should which one be given as a gift. And they were, I played football with them and went walking with them. Great. That was one of the highlights of my youth, being with the dogs. Perhaps I should tell you about this Filko, her story. She came to us in 1935, and very early 1935, and she was perhaps 6 or 8 weeks old at the time. She came from an estate, a country estate, not very far out of Budapest, where they were breeding pullies, and my father was given as a gift by the landlord, the owner of the estate, this dog, and was trained and brought up more or less by me, although I was only 6 years old at the time. There were two sort of masters and of the dog. One was me, and the other was one was my mother, who gave the food, of course, to the dog. In 1944, I am going ahead a little bit in time. We had to leave our house because the Hungarian Nazi Party came to power in a coup, or a putsch rather. And when we left the house, we lived in the house upstairs, and there were three flats down below. And when we left the house, the Filko was left on the care of the dwellers in those flats, the owners of those flats. And we were told later on that in the afternoon, Filko disappeared, went through the fence, and she was never seen from October the 15th, when we, 1944, when we left the house, until the 24th of January. Now, we returned to the house on the 24th of January, early afternoon, in 1945, and Filko reappeared in the afternoon, late afternoon, and nobody knows where she was or what she did during that time. She was not seen at all by anybody in the neighborhood from the 15th of October 44 until the 24th of January 45. And there was great rejoicing. She was very happy, and we were rather pleased. We, of course, didn't know that Filko disappeared. We were told, in fact, the next day, and everybody was amazed that she came back. By that time, we had Tobias, who was her one of her sort of dogs from her last litter a year earlier, and Tobias stayed in the house in the garden, and he was fed by the inhabitants of the flats downstairs, and he was in good condition. And that was in January. At the end of February, the Soviet army used our garden as a fuel depot, and there were fuel drums all over the place, and tankers were coming in and discharging oil into these drums, and then various army units came and took away the drums and brought back the empty drums. There was much trouble with drunken Soviet soldiers, and they often went around looking for women, mainly, and further drinks. And one night, which was sometime in the middle of March, I don't know the exact date, I was sleeping in a hallway, because the house was in a terrible condition. We shall come back to that later, perhaps. And two drunken Russian soldiers came in, and they were demanding to be let in the flat and given shelter. And Filko was absolutely furious and guarding the house, making a terrific noise, and not letting the soldiers come through the stairway in the house. And suddenly there was a burst of machine gun fire and then silence. And in the morning we found Philko shot dead on the terrace in front of the door. But Tobias, or Tobias, was cowering in the little wooden kennel which was there for the dogs to sleep in. The dogs were outside all the time. They slept always outside, no matter what the weather was outside. They were used to that. They had a very nice wooden kennel with straw and sacks, so it was fairly warm there. And it was in a kind of an alcove which protected them from wind and rain and adverse weather. And that was the end of Philko. Died as a heroine, really. So that's an important part of my youth, my companionship with dogs. We never, after we have come to England, we never had dogs in this country.
What was your own experience of relations in Wipest before the war between different communities?
Yes. I went to a Jewish elementary school from the age of 6 to 10. And then I went to the gymnasium, which is a grammar school, equivalent to the grammar school, from the age of 10 to the age of 18, which was, of course, a mixed school. And when I entered in 39, the grammar school, the gymnasium, there was already what was called a numerus clausus in the country. So it was only a certain percentage of Jewish students were accepted in those schools. And in a class of 40, there were 6 Jewish boys. We had separate religious education. We were locked out when there was religious education for Christian and mainly Catholic students, pupils at the school. And occasionally we had at the same time, but not always, Jewish religious education. An interesting part of that, and thinking back about it, well, not only now, but I have held this view for a long time, which was completely mismanaged religious education, because we were taught Hebrew, but not as a language, but as something irrelevant. And when we read some of the prayers in Hebrew, we could read Hebrew, because we were taught the letters and the alphabet and the various rules of pronunciation, but not of grammar. We used to learn the Hungarian meaning of Hebrew prayers, or even the Bible we started reading, by putting a bar after one or two words, and above it put the Hungarian meaning, and then go on and put another bar, and then put the Hungarian meaning to the next section, without any explanation whatsoever which word meant what, and which grammatical feature meant a preposition or a postposition or a future tense or past tense or a noun or an adjective. So we never really used the opportunity to look into another language, what the structure of the language was. Whereas we learned Latin for 8 years at the gymnasium. We were almost fluent in Latin by the time we matriculated. We learned 5 years German. We learned 2 years Italian. And although I matriculated.